everyone. I'm Anika.
I'm Tyba. You're listening to Soul Sisters and Stethoscopes,
the podcast where we, as two British South Asian doctors, press unmute on the conversations we need to be having more of in our communities. Today, we're talking about identity. So let's just get to it, Tyba. Why did we choose to discuss identity?
So identity is an important topic because it essentially dictates how you choose to live your life. And it's probably worth just discussing the definition as well. And what you'll probably find is that we do love our definitions around here. So the Collins Dictionary definition defines identity as the individual characteristics by which a person or a thing is recognized, or the identity of a person or place is the characteristics that they have that distinguish them from others. So Anika, what does identity mean to you?
To me, it's a lot about who I am as a person. So obviously you've got those attributes that you can't change. So things like your height, your skin color, your race, and things like that. But then also it's those things you can change. So the choices you make in life, that dictates how you live your life.
Yeah. I always find it really interesting how people kind of adopt those ways of living their life and their morals, because you're essentially a product of your environment and, you know, the way that you've been brought up, what you've been exposed to, what you've learned from people around you. And, you know, if, say, for example, you've been brought up in a certain way and believing a certain way of life, you might go out and find something else that kind of resonates with you and then adopt that as part of your belief system. And then that shapes the person that you are.
Yeah, it's a lot about nature versus nurture, isn't it? So who you are, who you're born as, and then what you are exposed to in your life, that helps, like you said, develop your moral compass and your beliefs and values in life.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the other thing is about, you know, where we get our information from as well. I mean, sometimes you hear about certain groups in society being misunderstood, or what they stand for is misinterpreted. But it's often due to the fact that they've never really had the opportunity to find out the facts from whatever's false, or they've not really got their information from reliable sources. And it just makes such a big difference getting a story from a person who has that experience versus the media. And I think the media and its biases is something that we just need to be really conscious of, and I don't really think people are very conscious of it. I mean, I don't know about you, but some of the WhatsApp messages that I get forwarded from my mum it's very just some of the things on there are just really awkward. It's like, you know, say, for example, if you want to know about Pakistani culture, so why don't you speak to somebody that's Pakistani? If you want to know about Muslims, why don't you go and speak to a Muslim instead? And, you know, that way you know you're going to get reliable information. And obviously there's differences between, you know, individuals, but you're going to get the right information that way. You know, another thing is putting like ethnicity and culture aside. Say, for example, if you wanted to know what it's like to work as a doctor or in a certain industry, you would go and ask somebody from that background, wouldn't you? Because you know that they're the ones that are living that life and they're going to give you the right information.
Yeah, you're right. Also, touching on a point that you made about media and its biases, I think that's why social media is quite important at the moment, because it doesn't have as many biases because people are putting their real narrative out there and it's truer. So what you were saying about the, you know, speak to someone who's South Asian if you want to know about what their life is like. It's a bit similar to, you know, the recent Black Lives Matter movement. You know, I know for a fact I didn't know as much as I did now. And that's only because I've seen more of a truer narrative through things like social media, because the media never show the real picture in those situations.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, often people do say social media has its negatives, but actually in this case, definitely it's been a positive because it's allowed people to have a voice and share their experiences. And I think the other thing is often people say that, you know, identity is encouraging people to adopt labels, and they find that labels are encouraging stereotypes. And there's like a famous quote that's like, that says, labels are only for clothing, not for people. But I think they give you like a sense of belonging, don't they? But some people might see it as like a restriction. So say, for example, you're identifying with a certain group, whether that's a positive or a negative influence, it might prevent you from discovering like your true self. But then at the end of the day as well, it's also about what you believe in your mindset, because I think the only person restricting what you believe in should be you, despite any external influences. But obviously that changes, doesn't it? Like as you sort of get older and adopt your own mindset and kind of become who you are.
I think the whole labels thing, I think people do see it as a negative, But I don't think it should be a fully negative thing, because, you know, the labels are important because it is how we identify ourselves. And it also is how we go about our day-to-day life and form things like relationships. It's how you build connections with people. So you need to have some level of labels to form those relationships. Because if you didn't have any labels, then what are we identifying as? We're just kind of people just,
floating
around the world. You know, you need something to have a basis to kind of work from. And I can see why it can be a negative thing, because it kind of goes to that whole thing of, you know, say if you have been taught a belief when you're growing up or taught certain things and values, and then when you get older, you realize, actually, this isn't really who I am. I don't agree with these. So sometimes that can create that discord inside and that kind of conflict. And that can be an issue. But I still think they're really important.
The other thing is, I guess, you know, what you've said about, you know, your beliefs not aligning with what you're used to. It's almost like you're essentially describing like an identity crisis, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. So when you have this identity crisis, you question yourself and who you are, etc. And that's why it's important to keep reflecting on who you are and reflecting on what your purpose in life is and what your identity is. Because otherwise you have times where you question who you are.
I think it's really important that you mentioned about the purpose thing. Because I think having an identity and a purpose, it's almost like your motivation, isn't it, in life? And it gives you a reason to do whatever you're doing, I guess.
Yeah, it gives you purpose. I think that's so important because you need purpose in life, don't you? You need something to keep you going day to day.
I think, you know, when you truly know who you are and you feel comfortable and confident and you're unapologetically yourself, and that's when you kind of quote unquote find yourself, then you also can like embrace the fact that differences can exist alongside whatever you also believe in. And I think it's that thing, isn't it, about like, yeah, I'm comfortable with who I am, but I'm tolerant of other beliefs as well. And I think it's a process, isn't it? And something that I love reading about is like self-development and how we kind of become who we are and how we form habits. And I was thinking about this the other day about like how, you know, when you kind of think about your identity, you can kind of work backwards by thinking about who you want to be and use that as like a motivation for change. And that could be like on a personal level, a spiritual level, it could be on an academic level. But I think it's quite a good way of kind of thinking about who you want to be and where you want to be as well.
Yeah. And it kind of goes back to the fact that your identity is not static. It changes. So over time, as you're growing up, you are developing into the person who you're supposed to be and also who you want to be. I think that can also create a bit of conflict when you've got this aim of who you want to be and you're not there yet. Until you get there, you feel like you've not achieved what you need to achieve and have a sense of feeling a bit lost, maybe. But I guess over time, we're always going to have that development. So we're always going to be growing.
Do you remember at university when they talk about Maslow's hierarchy of need self-actualization? It does link into that, doesn't it? It's kind of, you've got your basic needs and things. I think it's almost like you're kind of building bricks and kind of taking each step up this ladder to this hierarchy. And then part of that self-actualization is actually knowing who you are and being comfortable with that, you know, with who you are and being fulfilled.
Yes. Fulfillment. That is the key. That is exactly the key in life, to feel content and fulfilled.
Yeah. So I think another thing to think about is about how identity is formed and the influence of things like your job role or even just roles in your society.
To take us, for example, we've got so many roles, don't we? You know, we are daughters, we are sisters, we are doctors, Muslim, Pakistani, British, hijabi. There's so many things that you could use or words that you could use to describe us and our identity. And it's all of those things together that make us who we are.
Even though we're from a similar background, also academically and professionally, our experiences, you know, we can kind of learn from them as well.
We've got that basic common ground, which I guess people will need some kind of common ground to be able to identify and form relationships with each other. And then that's how you build on it.
How often do we question our identity? Is it something that you've ever questioned or thought, you know, I don't really know where I fit in?
Yeah, definitely. Probably a number of times in my life, actually. So going back to when I was a child, I grew up all over the place, as you know, Tiber.
Yeah, you've got a very interesting story.
So I was born in Ireland, and then I lived in Canada and America before I moved to England. Now, obviously, my background is still Pakistani, and I've always known that. My parents have always made sure that I've had that instilled in me. And then also I'm Muslim, so my religion has also been instilled in me from a young age too. And I think when you're a child, you don't really notice differences as much, because it's like those memes that you see, you know, like two kids from like a different racial backgrounds, and they're like hugging each other and stuff. Like,
yeah.
I genuinely think people are born with love in their hearts, and there's no prejudice and things. That is more of a thing that is instilled in you as you grow older, and that's more of an environmental thing. So when I was younger, I don't think I thought much about the fact that I was probably very different to the people around me, because I was the only South Asian girl in my school. But then there were subtle differences. So say when I was going to a friend's birthday party, my mum, you know, would remind me, oh, you can't have any meat because it's not halal. And, you know, so there's all those little subtle differences that there is a difference between you, but it never really impacted on my relationships, which is obviously good and important. Actually, I've got a really funny story. So when I was growing up, so I think I was about 10 probably. So, you know, obviously when you're a kid, you ask your mum and dad, you know, where do babies come from? Where have I come from? It's like a standard question, isn't it?
The birds and the bees story.
Yes. And I was always told, you know, you're a gift from God. And that was essentially what it was left at. You know, obviously in our culture, we don't tend to really talk about things too graphically when people are young. And so that was what I believed. And then when I was kind of playing with kids in my neighborhood, I think I was about 9 or 10 at this point. And I remember one of my friends was telling me the real story of how, you know, pre-creation happened. And I remember thinking, God, what are you talking about? That's disgusting. I was like, no. Like, you non-Muslims, that might be how you procreate and have babies. But me, us Muslims, we're a gift from God. And I said that so matter-of-factly, because I was so sure that this is how we are made. You know, we're gifts, you know, what, I don't know about you, but this is what we're like. And that was quite a big difference, isn't it? Because obviously as I grew older and learned, you know, about science and things, I was like, oh God, she was right.
It's like massive realization.
Yeah, it's like differences like that, that you don't, there's like subtle differences that you notice as you grow older, but you don't really think about them as much. But I don't think it's a bad thing. I think, you know, it's interesting and it makes things exciting to have that difference. I mean, what about you? Have you ever questioned your identity?
Yeah. God, that story is so funny. I'm just like imagining like little Anika just sat there like, excuse me, but I am a gift from God.
Bring out the sass.
Literally. But yeah, it's really interesting that, you know, like you mentioned about, you know, different things that you learn as you're getting older and you start to realize that you have these multiple influences over your identities. So yeah, it's really interesting that you were talking about things like Pakistani culture and those values kind of instilled in you when you're a child. So I guess it's a choice, isn't it, that you make as a parent, whether you want to bring that side of your life and culture into your child's life. And when I was younger, we were always kind of taught about our background, and my mum's side of the family lived in Pakistan, and things like, you know, even things like language as well. We learned how to speak Urdu, which is one of the native languages of Pakistan, from a very young age. So when we would go on holiday to Pakistan during the summer holidays, we'd obviously speak Urdu most of the time. And then when we'd come back to England, we would literally forget how to speak English. And it was just, and you'd go back to school and you'd start talking to your teachers and your friends, and it would obviously slowly come back. And obviously children are like sponges, aren't they? It's like, it's probably the best time to kind of learn another language when you're young and you're a child and you can absorb all that information. And it was just kind of this whole like back and forth of like learning English, learning Urdu. And, you know, then we eventually came up with this like almost like a mixed language, which was like half Urdu, half English. And then my dad would speak Punjabi, so that kind of came into it. And even now, like, we have this really weird mishmash language, and sometimes like, say if you're switching from one language to the other, I almost have to really consciously think about what I'm saying. But yeah, I think that was a time for me when I was a bit like, okay, who am I? What am I? Why can I not speak this language
Why
anymore?
Why can I not interact with these kids at school?
Yeah, like it was really weird. And it's something that my parents kind of were like, yeah, we noticed it, but you pick up the language straight away. So it wasn't really a big deal for us. And I think, you know, the other thing is about even with like your heritage and your culture, it allows you to understand people from the same background. So even obviously as doctors, we're quite lucky that we have that interaction with lots of different cultures and backgrounds, but we can kind of identify with them because we know the cultural differences that exist, or like, you know, the different sort of beliefs that people, certain groups in society have, and you know, you can relate to them and empathize with them.
Yeah, so true. Because another time I think for me where I did question my identity, or have done, is when we were at university, because you are, you know, before you're in a bubble where you're only really associating or interacting with a certain group of people that live around you or you're exposed to at school. Whereas you go to university and you've got people from all walks of life, and it's probably the first time you're living that on your own. It's a very volatile time. And I think for me, I found it not difficult, but I think at that time I was, say, you know, learning more about my religion. And that was probably a big thing for me, because I'm at university, there's all these people around me, and I'm living in England, and, you know, you're trying to live the Western life in quotation marks, but then you're also trying to balance that with your religion and trying to fit the religion into your day-to-day life and your culture as well. And you think, how do I bring this into my life? And that was a bit of a struggle for me, because you're kind of trying to do two things at once. And I think I found it quite difficult to balance both initially, but I think over time.
And then you met me, obviously.
And then you fixed it all, obviously.
No, I can't take that credit.
But you know, do you know what I mean? Only partly, only a little bit. Yeah. But do you know what I mean? Like, you're trying to balance these both big important sides to you. You know, you're living in the West, you're British, you're trying to gain those qualifications and, you know, achievements that you have set for yourself. And sometimes it would contradict each other, because in terms of the lifestyle that is normal when people go to university would contradict the religion. And it took a while to come to a comfortable balance between the two. And I think I'd probably say I've only really come to a happy, comfortable balance over the last few years, probably after university. There was always that development since then. I don't know. What do you think?
University definitely is a volatile time, and I think it's that stage in your life where you're probably getting exposed to things that you never would really get exposed to if you were still in your, say, hometown, or still living with your parents, for example, or even if you're living at home. You know, the fact that you're in a place where you've got people from all different walks of life in one place, and you're getting all that exposure, it's essentially, you know, you're going to build your own identity by getting little snippets from other people. And even if it's not affecting your identity, at least it's giving you different ideas and insights into different people's cultures. Do you remember at uni when we had all those different events? There was like Arab Soc, and there was like a Pakistan Soc, and all the different societies would have all these events where you'd kind of go and like learn about different cultures. And I just thought that was such a nice opportunity to showcase what a culture is all about. And that's one thing that I do really miss about university. It was just like meeting different people and, you know, coming across people that you might not generally come across in everyday life.
It was nice, wasn't it? How do you think your identity as, say, so if we say your identity is a Pakistani Muslim British doctor, how do you think it impacts on your day-to-day life professionally when you're at work?
Really interesting question, actually. So there's been plenty of times where colleagues and patients have asked questions about my faith and my ethnic background, which I've had no issue in discussing, obviously within reason, because it can create interesting discussions. But my identity and religious beliefs and personal beliefs don't impact directly on how I provide care for patients. Like when I'm at work, for example, I am myself, but I'm also a professional and I've got my doctor's hat on. And there's a lot of rules set out by the General Medical Council that we have to follow. So we have an obligation to respect the beliefs, values and decisions of patients and colleagues. And equally, everyone has a right not to be discriminated against either. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, what you've said is so true. I've had some really interesting conversations with colleagues and patients as well. I guess one thing also that may cause those questions to arise is our name. I guess that's another thing that forms our identity. And it's almost like an instant giveaway of the fact that you may be from an ethnic minority, especially in our case. And people may perceive a lot of things from that. For example, you know, people often assume you can't speak English properly. And then when they speak to you, they kind of act really surprised. And I know I've had a lot of colleagues who have had patients asking them how they know how to speak English so well, which, you know, I don't know how to take that. But I guess a lot of that comes from the name, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, I sometimes get people that are surprised that I'm female when they see my name. Obviously, if they've never seen me before, which is quite interesting. And obviously, if they've never spoken to me before, because I didn't think I had a manly voice.
I don't think you do, don't worry.
Oh, thanks. Good. I guess, obviously, you've got that like physical representation, haven't you? Especially wearing a hijab. I guess people know that, yeah, okay, she's a Muslim because she wears a headscarf. It's something that I was very self-conscious about, especially when I first started wearing the hijab. But now I just think, you know, like when you just kind of own your identity, you're like, yeah, well, this is me. I shouldn't have to apologize for who I am, or I'm much more comfortable in who I am. So I don't feel like it affects me as much. But certainly when I first started wearing it, I would be quite conscious about, you know, what might people think of me. And I was quite scared about, you know, say if I was walking down the street, would someone want to attack me, or would someone want to, you know, throw something at me? Because I'd heard these stories from friends and, you know, in the media as well. You'd always hear about, you know, a Muslim being attacked or someone pulling her headscarf off and things. But I think it was more just about having that confidence and just being myself. And that kind of made me more comfortable. I think another thing is like, when I initially started wearing the hijab and I was working, I felt like it was just a really good opportunity to educate people around me as well. And I mean, I was obviously learning more about my religion as well at the same time. And I just thought, you know what, it's quite nice that people are curious and I should make the most of that and teach them about why I wear it and who I am, rather than using it as, you know, something that maybe I would get offended by or,
yeah,
like, you know, have a problem with.
I've had so many patients who've actually asked me stuff about it. And I guess it's that fear, isn't it? We've got to be open-minded, because otherwise how are we going to know about other cultures and backgrounds and people and groups and society, etc.? But I've had people that have, I think they've been scared of asking me about my hijab. You know, I've had people who've literally, they want to ask me, they kind of touch on it a bit, but then they're afraid of offending me. And I literally open my arms out like fully to them. I'm like, you know what, yeah. No, ask me, like, I don't mind, I'm not going to get offended. You know, if anything, I want to talk about these things. It's interesting to me, I find it exciting how you're different to me in terms of your beliefs, my beliefs, and we can learn from each other. And actually I find that when I do open up the topic, when they touch on it a bit, they're so receptive to it and they're really grateful that we've had that in-depth conversation about something other than the problem that they've come in for in the first place. And I think that's really important, because otherwise, if you don't ask those questions, how are you going to learn about each other? If you're just afraid of, you know, offending someone and tiptoeing around them, how do we all then develop and grow and learn more about different people and cultures and backgrounds?
We should see it as like inquisitive and see it as curiosity rather than taking offense from when people ask us. And I think, like you said, we just have to kind of open up the floor and encourage people to ask questions, because actually majority of the time it's because they want to be educated and what our background is. And just giving people benefit of the doubt, isn't it? It's the only way that we're going to spark conversations and increase awareness of like your cultural differences and your similarities.
Yeah. And when I think about situations like this, it all almost makes me think sometimes, does that then make me an ambassador to the beliefs that I hold or the group of people in society that I identify with? So sometimes I think, you know, am I then an ambassador for a Muslim Pakistani doctor as well, I guess, you know, and do I have to then watch how I carry myself day to day because people may form beliefs and biases about the groups of people that I represent through me? Do you ever feel like that?
It's like you kind of almost become a little bit conscious, don't you, because you are that physical representation of what you believe. And, you know, like you said, especially if you're physically making it obvious that you are Muslim, for example, at the end of the day, the people are going to get their narrative from that, aren't they? It's like, say, for example, if you show that you're a kind, respectful, nice, funny, you know, lovely human being.
Oh, thanks, Ty, but I am all of those things.
Okay, don't get too soppy. Yeah, like people will think, okay, well, actually, yeah, the media has said X, Y, and Z about Muslims, but actually there's this really nice person that I know is a Muslim. And actually I know that that's not true. And it's like, you know, when you have a conversation with like a non-Muslim friend or colleague, and there might be things that they've seen in the news or media, or they've got this sort of idea about what a Muslim is or any sort of characteristic. Obviously just using this as an example. It's good, because then you can clarify what's right and wrong, and then they might then be like, okay, well, I kind of wish I had this conversation earlier, because actually that's cleared up a lot of you know, doubts that I had, or cleared up things that I thought were true that aren't true, and vice versa. I guess we do have that responsibility, don't we, for people getting the right stories and the right education and not just relying on what they hear.
And but I guess it also works on the flip side, doesn't it? So yes, we may be ambassadors to the groups of people that we represent in whatever way you want to call it, background, race, religion, beliefs, etc., etc. But does that then make us responsible for the actions of the minority in your group in society? So say if someone in your group does something really bad or horrible, you know, with events over the last number of years, etc., does that then make us responsible for the acts of a few who probably actually are very different to us? So I just feel like sometimes there's a lot of pressure on certain groups of people to apologize for the acts of the minority in their group in society, when actually it's not their fault they've done that, and they don't identify with those beliefs because obviously they've not done anything like that, and they are also against that. But it almost feels like a pressure that you have to voice out the fact that you are not happy about this, because if you don't, people automatically assume, oh, that's from the same group of society as that person, that must mean they all believe the same thing.
Yeah. It's like not painting everybody with the same brush, isn't it? And I guess it, I mean, what you're probably alluding to is kind of events like things like 9/11 and you know, other events that have happened. And essentially things like terrorism, isn't it? And unfortunately, it's something that we see in the media a lot. And it kind of makes, you know, you kind of feel this thing where it's like, okay, here we go again. You know, you feel like people are going to be judging you again because you identify with the same group.
But based on religion only, though, isn't it, really?
That's the problem, isn't it? But I say, for, you know, if you hear a story in the news about, say, a teacher who's been convicted of being a paedophile, do all teachers then feel that they need to condemn and apologise for the actions of that one individual?
It's interesting, because the media doesn't help it, though, because I think what you find in the media is when there are, say, acts of terrorism, if it's an ethnic minority involved, then they use that word. But if it was, say, British or, you know, a white Caucasian person, they wouldn't use that specific word. I mean, I feel like we're definitely like going off topic now, but you know what I mean?
But it does boil down to identity, doesn't it? So Anika, say if somebody asked you, where are you from? How would you generally answer that question? Because I would generally say I'm British Pakistani.
If someone asks me, I would generally say Pakistani, British, Irish, because I feel like the Irish needs to be there because I was born there, isn't it?
Irish.
I feel like you're making fun of my accent now, the little twangs, but I'm just going to let it slide.
No. I have plenty of twangs of my own, so let's not even go there.
Yeah. But I think the real question is, what are they alluding to? Because often they'll say, people will say, where are you from? But actually, what they're alluding to is where, you know, I'll say things like, oh, I'm from the north of England or whatever, because that's where I live. But then they will turn around and say, no, but where are you really from?
So what they're really trying to say is, why are you brown?
Literally, exactly. So that's what they're trying to get to, which is fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with asking that question. But then it's almost like you're not allowed to be British. You're not allowed to be from England. You're not allowed to be from the north of England, because you say the answer and they don't agree with you. They're like, no, that's not where you're from. Where are you actually from?
But then that's their issue, isn't it? It's like, well, you clearly need to word your question in a way that's more specific and just ask me.
Exactly, because it's not bad. You know, I'm not ashamed of where I'm from.
Yeah.
I'm happy to talk about where I'm originally from and my background.
But then I guess maybe it's just the fact that, you know, they are reluctant to cause offence, and maybe they don't know why they don't know how to actually approach that question. But
because I think people can take offense to it, because I know people who've said they take offense when people say, no, but where are you from? You're not, you know, originally. Okay. And I mean, I personally don't see why it's a big deal, you know.
I think it just boils down to what we mentioned earlier about embracing your identity. You are who you are, and don't apologize for it. Like, it's something you should be proud of, isn't it? So going on to how you classify your ethnicity, I was looking up about the census, which is a questionnaire that you do every 10 years. And it's basically a detailed snapshot of society. And you'll get asked questions about your household and your home and where you're from. It kind of builds that snapshot, and then it's used by governments and public bodies to plan local services and education and healthcare. So the last one was in 2011, and the next census will be due next year. So I think it'll be really interesting just to compare the figures from the last census to the one that's upcoming, because there's going to be a lot of change, isn't there, with lots of people migrating, and it'll be a good one to look at. So the census in 2011, it basically showed the population of England and Wales were 56.1 million, and 86% of the population was white. And Asian ethnic minorities actually made up the second largest percentage, which was 7.5%. And then that was followed by Black ethnic groups at 3.3%. 94% of people completed the questionnaire, and 97% of those people answered the question about ethnicity. So it's interesting to see, isn't it, like where you would class yourself within that questionnaire as well. It's like you always get that box, don't you, anytime you kind of fill out a questionnaire, and it's like it's always got like an other, or
yeah,
you always have to, you have to put yourself into a box essentially.
Yeah, put yourself under a label.
Yeah.
No, you're right. It's interesting to see what people identify as, but also when the next one comes about, I think there will be a lot more ethnic minorities, mm-hmm. because the world is becoming smaller, I think, figuratively. And
people, it's shrinking.
People are, it's so much easier to travel. You know, think about things like, you know, the pandemic that just happened. The reason it spread so fast and quickly is because people are traveling so much more, and the world has just become a lot smaller, and it's easier to travel. And that's yeah. why you've got all these big cities and hubs like London or New York or Dubai and Singapore, where people are migrating to and living there because of how multicultural they are. And I just think the world is becoming more multicultural, and I think it's really yeah. cool.
It's a beautiful thing, isn't it? And I think it's like some of those cities that you mentioned, they literally run off the work of expats. If you think about it, all those different people are coming together and they're contributing to that culture. It's like, even like with British culture, without minorities, I feel like I don't really know what British culture would look like. I just feel like we've become a part of it. That's how I see things anyway.
Yeah, we have. But I think that's what makes it exciting. If everyone was from the same background and there wasn't many differences, how boring would life be? I just feel like it's those differences that create interesting conversations and create more awareness, and you learn more and you develop more. And without that, life would be a bit dull.
Yeah, basically adding a bit of colour into the world.
Yeah, figuratively yeah. and technically.
Yeah. So, I mean, what do you think about social media and how that forms your identity or changes your identity?
Social media is an interesting one, because I always wonder how true people's identity comes across on it, because you are essentially choosing what you show to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you would show things that are too personal to you on something like social media when anyone in the world can access it. So it's only a certain view that you are giving to other people. But I guess that's fair enough. You know, people can do that in their day-to-day life as well as social media. You don't always know personal things about someone that you come across in life. But I think yeah. it's a good thing at the same time, because everyone is not just relying on the news and the media to get the narratives of other people. Because, you know, I don't know about you, but I know for a fact, especially recently, I've learned a lot more about what's happening in the world through social media compared to putting on, you know, the news channels.
Yeah, I guess it boils down to censorship as well, doesn't it? There's a lot of things that, to be fair, even on the social media platforms are censored, but there are ways of it getting through to people before it's censored. And I guess, you know, like you said, you only choose what you want people to know at the end of the day, don't you? And you have that choice, which is really important to know. And but you have that choice in real life as well, don't you? Like, you know, the vulnerable parts of yourself, you're only really going to show that to people that are very close to you or people that you trust. Yeah,
I guess that kind of means that you've got, well, actually, it sounds like you've got a split personality, but it almost shows you've got two identities. And you've got that identity that you show to the world and you are open about, and then you've got that identity that you keep close to yourself, and it's either personal to you only or something that you only share with those close to you.
Yeah, or I guess maybe it's just, rather than different identities, is it just that you're showing certain traits, like personality traits? Because we know that certain traits are only going to emerge in certain conditions or situations as well. So it's an interesting one. But you know, in social media, you're kind of putting yourself out there, aren't you? Like we said, you know, there's pros and cons of everything, and especially with social media, but it's about your intentions, isn't it? It's like, why are you putting this certain thing in the public eye? Is it because you want to become an ambassador for that identity, or, you know, whatever you believe in? Or is it because you want to be famous, Insta famous? Or is it because, you know, you want to create a new community? Because, you know, you discover all these communities in social media that you didn't even know existed. And I think it's pretty cool. It's like going back to that purpose, isn't it? And like your intentions. In Islam, one of the things that we focus on quite a lot is about focusing on what your intentions are for whatever you do. Say if you're putting something up on social media, is it going to lead to benefit or is it going to cause more harm? And I think more and more people are probably thinking more about that when they do put things up on social media, because it is influential, isn't it?
It is. And people are reading it and they're going to have an opinion on what you put out there.
Mm.
And coming back to what you said about purpose, I was reading something recently where it was telling you how your identity is formed, and it involves three things. So one is discovering and developing your potential. The next step is choosing your purpose in life. And then the third step is finding those opportunities to exercise that potential and purpose. If we didn't have that purpose, we wouldn't really have a motivation in life to get up and do what we're doing.
I think another really important thing relating to identity is just reflecting on how your family arrived here. So obviously, I mean, we're essentially children of immigrants, aren't we? And I guess I've always thought it's like an obligation for me to keep my cultural identity in order to kind of honor my family who came to this country. You know, coming to somewhere where you just don't know the language, you don't know anything about the place, it's to live a better life for your family and generations that come after that. It's such a big thing, isn't it? And I think people often forget about the contribution of minorities, especially after the Second World War. So Britain obviously used like resources from Europe initially, but then when that was all exhausted, they turned to South Asia and West Indies to recruit people to come back and regenerate the economy and things like the textile industry, steel industry, etc. And I just think it's such an amazing thing though, because I just can't imagine having to make such a big move. And you know, you always hear that racial slur, well, go back to where you came from, and you just think, well, actually kind of was Britain that asked my family to be here, and then I was kind of born. And it's crazy,
and,
isn't it?
And didn't Britain colonize South Asia anyway at one point? So really we're all from the same place, actually.
Yeah, pretty much. So just to conclude, I think some of the take-home messages from today are to recognise that identity is dynamic, and we shouldn't feel that we need to fit into a single neat box, and we should be proud of who we are. We should embrace our differences, and also it'd be really interesting for us to have a little think about our heritage and how our families made their journeys here. If you guys have any thoughts about what we've discussed today or enjoyed our episode, please get in touch, and we look forward to talking more about these sorts of topics in our future podcasts.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.